Move on. We like to keep our public hearing and open forum in time with what's designated on the agenda, which is 3 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Mountain. So in order to do that, we are going to jump around on our agenda a little bit. We're going to move to item number 12. And I see Mr. Kanda coming up here. I know prior to that, we're going to have a presentation. So, John, I'll let you go ahead and just kind of explain from here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, John Kanda, Terrestrial Section Chief for the Department. So next we're going to talk about the beaver hunting and trapping season. And before we do that, I'd like Alex Solem to come up and present on the draft Black Hills Beaver Action Plan that we're going to put out for public review and then ask you to adopt at your July Commission meeting. So a lot of great information in here that will lead right into our recommendation here today. So that I'll turn it over to Alex.
Thank you, John. Thank you, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. Appreciate you having me out here. Never been to Custer for a Commission meeting, so this is gorgeous. I can see why you guys come here annually. But like John said, I'll be presenting on the Black Hills Beaver Action Plan. This was developed with folks from Region 1 and myself and other people in my shop. I forgot to mention Alex Holm, senior wildlife biologist out of the Huron office. So we'll get started here. If you want to advance the slide, Chris. So just a little background, got some beaver biology. So obviously, like most people know, they typically build a series of dams, bake dens or lodges. This is where they essentially live and then reproduce and all that sort of thing. They consist of family groups with an adult pair and then offspring from the current year and previous year. One of the cool things about beaver is that they don't usually get kicked out of their family group till 2 years of age. As soon as that new litter comes in, then they kind of get weaned off. And then that's when they're expected to explore and find new territories to inhabit. They construct a cache of deciduous material prior to the freeze-up. This is obviously to feed themselves and their families through the winter and through the ice. You know, winters in South Dakota and other parts that these critters inhabit are obviously brutal, so storing this food is essential for their survival. Following the spring thaw, like I mentioned, the beaver, two-year-old beaver will get kicked out, and they'll disperse to new territories and kind of establish their own home ranges. And one of the kind of crucial things with beaver is that they are very territorial, so these family groups inhabit their territory, and they don't allow a new beaver into the area. They'll actually, kick them out and have castor mounds and all that sort of stuff to signal that, this is they're in other person's neck of the woods and, stay out. So go ahead, Chris. Beaver, they require herbaceous and deciduous woody material for not only their food, but also their construction. It's what they make their dams out of, sometimes what they make their lodges out of, all that sort of thing. They provide numerous ecological benefits anywhere that they inhabit. This can create escape habitat for fish, for themselves, for otters, all that sort of stuff. They make sure to slow down water flow. So when you have kind of these rain scouring events, these dams will slow down the water so it doesn't scour the landscape and have these deep trench streams. They trap the sediment as these rain events occur, so it helps improve water quality and so forth. And one of the really cool things is that obviously with dams, it raises the water table. And anytime there's beaver around, usually it signals a really healthy ecosystem. They benefit multiple species just besides themselves. So some of the issues that we usually face with beavers that affect their population, some of the widespread issues that affect them are obviously habitat degradation. So these incised streams, the picture on top, you can see just a kind of a deep channel here. It's really, besides a water source, it doesn't offer very much habitat for, say, fish, otters, beaver, other type of aquatic mammals. And a lot of these can occur from overgrazing the riparian areas. There are also some other environmental things that, are outside of our control are scouring rain. So these downpours of 5 inches or more that, lead to these flooding events in the absence of dams and beavers. A lot of times these will lead to flooding events. And then obviously drought, where you know, they're an aquatic mammal, so if we don't have any water on the landscape, they're really not going to persist. Some of the more local challenges that we have with these species is obviously social tolerance. Like I mentioned before, they require herbaceous material to eat, so that means usually chewing down trees, and not everybody's usually thrilled about that, even though, you know, that's how they, you know, survive. We also get some local diseases such as tularemia. These outbreaks that occur are usually very localized and kind of like small little hotspots on the landscape, but these are kind of the main factors that we lead to kind of their to limit their population. So, like I mentioned before, with help from some Region 1 staff and other folks in my shop, we decided to come up with a Black Hills Beaver Action Plan. Obviously, it's specific to the Black Hills. We're not talking out on the prairie. And one of the management goals that we decided on is that we're going to manage the beaver populations within the Black Hills Fire Protection District with scientific data and techniques that encourage the occupation of suitable habitat, and provide sustainable use and enjoyment within social tolerance for the level of the species. So we want to make sure beaver on the landscape, offer the opportunity for trapping. You know, the pelts and stuff are very valuable, and those folks that do trap it are good stewards of the land. But at the same time, we want to make sure we manage the population so we don't get a ton of calls saying that they're eating up trees and doing a bunch of damage on the landscape. So in order to do this, the first thing, obviously, we have to determine the status of beaver populations. So we're going to annually monitor their distribution and abundance. We have done cooperative flights with the U.S. Forest Service, counting caches to come up with an index of abundance. In addition to this, that was done roughly every 5 years. We don't know, you know, the status of that with the Fish and Wildlife Service right now, but we obviously are going to try to cooperate with that survey the best we can. But in lieu of that, we're going to do much like we do with the Survey 123 app that we have for river otters, where our staff are out on the landscape, running around the hills, chasing collared animals, doing checking cameras, all that sort of stuff. So we have a lot of folks out there, a lot of boots on the ground. So we're going to, you know, essentially use these folks as people to present verified reports, a lot like we do for river otters. And these would include reports of beaver themselves, sign, any carcasses collected, kind of gathering as much information as we can to come up with an idea of their distribution on the landscape. In addition to this, we're also going to summarize depredation reports with our WDS staff. Obviously, if we're getting complaints of beavers chewing trees and that sort of thing, we know beaver are there, so we're going to, you know, use that type of information as well to kind of give us an index of how their population's doing. If we end up getting a lot of depredation reports, usually that's pretty indicative that the population is doing well, or at least on, you know, some sort of incline. Oops. All right, so what this monitoring will look like, this is a table that came from the U.S. Forest Service and their flights. So essentially what they did was they traveled all these watersheds and through aerial and counted the number of caches that they could see from aerial observations, flew up and down the streams that went into these watersheds, and they counted them. So you can see here it was done in 2007, 2012, and 2023, so roughly every 5 years. You can see the count that essentially they had 38, 60, and 16 caches observed, and this gave us a cache per mile index. And because of this, we were able to come up with a kind of a naive distribution of how many or how much beaver we actually have in the Black Hills. So we were able to see whether or not a verified report actually occurs in these watersheds. We can come up with a proportion of how many watersheds actually have beaver in it by going out and observing them. So, you know, potentially in addition to this aerial survey, we're going to use these opportunistic reports from GFP staff and the public. With these opportunistic reports, we came up with like a harvest structure matrix for the Black Hills Fire Protection District. If there is under 50% occupancy of those watersheds that I just showed you on the map there, we are calling for a closure of the season to try to limit any type of harvest and that sort of thing, and hopefully have their population or their population distribution increase in the Black Hills. Within 50 to 79% of those watersheds being occupied, we are going to allow for a restricted season. This could entail private land only, resident only, certain harvest limits, per trapper per year, or that sort of thing. Depending on, kind of the history of what we have with these reports, we'll obviously provide recommendations for what that restricted season would look like, depending on what our field staff, biologists like myself, and anybody, WDM staff, all that sort of thing involved. It's just kind of a blanket type, bounds, I guess you could say, to what the season would look like. And then obviously if we have greater than 80% distribution in these watersheds, we would recommend to open it up on private and public lands for both residents and non-residents, with the potential there to have maybe a non-resident trapping gate restriction, kind of like it currently has. But again, we're going to have to rely on staff. We're going to have to rely on our data, as well as just reports from trappers and things like that, too, to kind of address the season and put on some restrictions or bounds or type things just to, make sure we're doing our due diligence in managing the species. In addition to this, with the wildlife damage response, our WDS staff, we get very few complaints, I guess you could say, with beavers in the Black Hills currently. However, we are going to try to do some trap and transfer from the city areas such as Rapid City, and then move them into remote areas in the Black Hills when that opportunity presents itself. Obviously, we're going to do our due diligence on putting these ant critters out there. Translocated animals do move quite a bit, and we certainly don't want them causing problems anywhere that we bring them in. So we're talking remote areas in the northern Black Hills where the habitat is, high, what we consider good quality habitat. And making sure that, we put them in areas where we hope they stay. And then obviously we don't want to do lethal removal if we can avoid it. However, there's certain situations, obviously, with everything that, that might be the best step, ruining infrastructure, public safety hazards, that sort of thing. So we're going to allow our WDS staff to, come up with the idea or use their smarts to, figure out the best approach that we can do. So then moving on to the second objective, we're obviously going to coordinate with private landowners and conservation partners to promote the restoration of streams and riparian habitat. Obviously, these are aquatic mammals. They live in these type streams and riparian habitats, so we need to make sure that that habitat that they are in is of good quality and we're protecting it. So in order to do this, we're going to restore degraded habitat, such as installing beaver dam analogs and other low-tech devices that essentially act as a beaver dam and pond water, and then that'll make that type of habitat more conducive for beaver actually staying there, as well as providing other ecological benefits, if beaver don't happen to be there, such as slowing down water, promoting the growth of willows and that sort of thing instead of these incised, really degraded streams that sometimes we see. And obviously in order to do this with our private lands program, we'll provide some financial and technical advice through our cost share programs. Anytime that we can make the riparian areas healthier through, good stewardship for grazing, fencing, other types of infrastructure that come with it, we are promoting, essentially good beaver habitat out there. So our private lands program, isn't just for deer and pheasants. If we do it right, it can essentially help a multitude of species. So here's just a picture of those low-tech devices that we'll be installing. I stole this from Trenton Hathley's report or presentation a few years ago. So some of you might seen this or might have seen these pictures before, but essentially all it is man-made dams. They slow water and simulate beaver dams, and they span the entire stream width. They're temporary. So they last anywhere from 1 to 10 years, depending on, you know, what the water conditions are, how fast it rains, and so forth. But they're good ways for us to go out on the landscape and influence it with beaver not being there, while promoting the habitat to, that is conducive for them to, you know, come back into it. So that is the gist of the beaver action plan. You know, like I said, it encompasses a harvest matrix, how we're going to monitor them, that sort of thing. I do want to touch on some habitat and translocation efforts that we have currently been doing in the last couple years. For instance, on our, you know, state game production areas, Willow Creek and Spring Creek, we have been installing these beaver dam analogs. In Willow Creek in particular, we've put 80 of these bad boys out there. And in addition to this, we've also installed 7,000 willow trees, I guess you could say, to establish it so they could have a place to eat, or so they could have some food and kind of restore that riparian area. Spring Creek, we are planning on installing some more BDAs as well as plant willows. We don't know how many that will be, but one of the big things with these BDAs is that they don't influence a huge stretch of stream, so you have to have a lot of these to actually go out there and make a difference. So we're talking, you know, 20 to 30 to even influence a mile of stream distance. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of boots on the ground, but we're doing our best to try to impact what we can on our game production areas. Their U.S. Forest Service also has installed over 135 of these in the Northern Hills in the past 2 years. So they're doing a great job, as well as to try to, you know, promote beaver habitat in the Black Hills. And I do want to touch on the translocated efforts. In 2024, we did translocate 7 beaver from problem areas, whether it be in Rapid City or out on the foothills of the prairie, and we did release them into the northern Black Hills. However, we did have, you know, a little bit limited success in that. Translocated beaver, it's kind of a coin flip sometimes. They tend to move quite a bit, whether it's they're not finding the habitat that they like, or they're just, you know, kind of in shock from the area that they were taken. However, it can be very successful when the habitat is there for those beaver to go into. So we're going to try to continue those efforts. And again, by focusing on habitat in the Black Hills and restoring these streams and giving them an opportunity for good habitat, we're hoping these translocation efforts will be better. And with that, that's all I have. I can field any questions.
Very good. Thank you. And for those following along, this is actually item number 24 on our agenda, if you wanted to look at some of the information provided. Questions for Alex? I do have a couple questions for you, Alex. You mentioned a couple of times some of the other animals that benefit if there is a healthy beaver ecosystem. Could you just explain a little bit more what those animals are?
Yeah, absolutely. Through the chair. So obviously beavers with ponding and water, they can do really well for trout populations. You know, otters go hand in hand with beaver. Not saying that, you know, the Black Hills is a good spot for it, but especially in eastern South Dakota, they're very sympatric when it comes to it. So beavers will create a dam and create ponding water where there's depth and prey fish are available for these otters to go after. There's other species besides just trout that benefit from it. You're talking watering holes for elk, you know, anything you can really think of, it's definitely benefited. Waterfowl, yeah, just kind of off the top of my head.
Very good. And then the other question, there was one of the slides showing the caches that have gone down through
caches.
The years. Caches?
Yes, correct.
Explain to me again, is that, what is it? A cache.
Okay, yeah, my apologies. I did a very poor job of explaining what a cache is.
No.
So a cache is essentially, it's collected food. So these beavers will go out and collect food and put it in a pile. So it's a cache of food. So that's what it is. So those beavers will go around throughout the summertime collecting food. They'll stockpile it for the wintertime, and they're very visible from the air and very visible from even walking down these streams. You can see these piles of food there, whether it be willows. In eastern South Dakota, a lot of times it's corn and that sort of thing. So that is what a cache is.
And we're seeing less of those.
Through the surveys that they have done, yes, we've seen a decline in the number of caches that from 2007 to 2012.
And do we have reasons as to why?
Yes, there's a few reasons for that. like I said, beaver are obviously semi-aquatic, so the variability of water in the Black Hills is one issue that we have. There's a really good report that comes with this this table that we had that the Fish and Wildlife, or excuse me, the U.S. Forest Service and GFP both wrote when they were doing this aerial survey, and they kind of hypothesized, or they had a nice graph in there that visualized the total accumulation of precipitation for like the last 15 years, and had an annual line on there, and there was quite a few years that that precipitation was actually below it. So anytime that you're taking precipitation off the landscape, these streams don't have water in it to begin with, so then therefore beavers can't pond it, and their location that they're at is extremely limited when it comes down to that. So that is one of the main reasons that they were talking about, and they hypothesized a few other, but it's one of those things that it's kind of unknown.
Very good, thank you.
If I could add to that, Madam Chair, you know, really what it comes down to, though, and what Alex is getting at is it's habitat degradation. So they're really dependent on these riparian areas, and like he said, the water flows and those kind of habitats. And what we've seen in the Black Hills over the last, say, 30 or 40 years is those riparian areas in particular have gone downhill. We're losing them for various reasons, whether it's pine encroachment or differences in water flows, or and sometimes wildlife and ungulates, cattle in the Black Hills that are trampling those riparian areas. So really, when it comes down to it, that's the main driver here with our beaver populations in the Black Hills and driving them down is that habitat loss.
Okay, thank you. Additional questions from the commission, comments? Secretary Roebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. I'm kind of curious on the reproductive potential of the beaver population. And when we do have the right ingredients on the landscape, how fast can these beaver populations recover? What kind of growth rates would we expect? Do you have any information in regards to that?
Yeah, through the chair. So there's some literature out there that these beaver populations, they can reproduce very efficiently given the right conditions. We're talking, you know, 3 to 5 years, their population get to enough where some sort of harvest can occur. And we're not saying open it up completely with unrestricted harvest or anything like that, but 3 to 5 years, there is the opportunity there. There's other studies that sometimes it takes a little bit longer, you know, upwards of 10 years, but there actually comes a time within their population dynamics that harvest needs to occur for their population to keep growing. So when we get to that, I'm not sure of, but there is the potential.
Very good. Additional questions, comments? Very good report. We thank you for that. And then, John, will you stay with us as we move to number item 12?
Yes, thank you.